Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Joe Giacalone, who is a former cop and detective also, are you?
Sergeant, yep, sergeant in the New York City Police Department.
And author of a number of books, including A Criminal Investigative Function for the Police, which has become kind of a Bible, and a new one called The Cold Case Handbook, which one of the reasons you're on is because coming up on April 11 to 14 is the Hamptons Whodunit Festival, which is a very exciting time here in the Hamptons. We'll be talking about that. And I've been reading John Connolly's books, who does a lot of cold case stuff, and he was an honored guest last year at this event. But let's talk about, first of all, about your career. What got you interested in law enforcement in the first place when you were young?
Well, I started out, I became a cop in 1992, but way before then, if you asked my parents, they would have bet the house that I would have been a fireman. My godfather was a New York City fireman, and he would take me into New York City to see the firehouses and the trucks, and I had the hats and, you know, everything to go along with it. And then, if you remember, there used to be a TV show, Emergency. And I don't remember too much of it, but my mother said I used to sit in front of the TV and just stay there, you know, and watch the entire show without saying a word. So they thought I was going to be a fireman. But when the time came to take the exam, the fire department wasn't hiring. They weren't hiring for years. So I decided then to take the police department test because you were able to then what they refer to as lateral over. So let's just say a year or two down the road, they came out with the test. I could then leave the police department, go right into the fire department without losing any time I had already spent in the police department. But that didn't work out either. So, they didn't give a test until I actually had gotten promoted to sergeant already. Oh. And at that point, I would have then taken a pay cut because I would have gone down to the top pay of a fireman, but I was still making more money as a sergeant, and I had already about 6 years into it, and I decided I'm going to stick with this career, and I'm glad I did.
Well, you're going to be at this Hamptons Whodunit, and what are you going to be talking or having a reading, or what is going to be your job, or what is your plan?
Yeah, well, this is the second time I'm back. I was at the first ever one last year, and so this is the second annual, and I'm excited about it. They've actually made me a true crime consultant for this time, too. I helped them get some of the people as speakers. I'm going to be doing a part of a couple of panels. We're going to be talking, of course, about some cold cases. I'm going to be part of this. They have a wine and crime event that they have, and, there'll be book signings and stuff like that, but I'm easily available, right? I'm at the event. I'll be in town. People are going to ask questions. It's actually great in that respect because it's such an intimate venue. You get a chance to actually speak to people that, you know, maybe have watched some of your TV shows that you've been into. So it's kind of fun.
It's in several venues, I think, throughout the Hamptons this time, much larger than it was. Just curious what your take is with having written these manuals, compare a true crime with fictional crime. In particular, I've been reading John Connolly's books, and someone once said to me, "Oh, none of that's true. I mean, it's not true. It's fiction, but it sounds true to me." And I wondered what your take on this was and how it might differ.
Well, many of the fictional books that you read have a lot of truth to it, right? So when people do say that, I say, listen, yes, there is some literary license. However, most of them can compared to a police procedural, where they go through the different steps and the different things. Because especially now, as the true crime community is growing, people becoming more informed, they're getting better educated about the actual field and what actually goes on, they can pick out what they would end up terming determined to be, you know, either not true or even fraud, right? So it's the fiction writers really walk a thin line on that, and that's why most of it does end up to be nearly accurate, right? Because nothing can be totally accurate because it is fiction.
What brought you to write these manuals?
Well, that's so I've been teaching at John Jay College for the last 19 years. And for the first couple of years, I was given based on my background, you know, in the police department, I was given the criminal investigations class. And I was using some textbooks out there, and I was always complaining. I said, these books don't teach the kids actually how to investigate anything. They're kind of just an overview, you know, basically here it is, and that's it. And this is how, you know, nothing how anything works or how detectives think. So finally, one of the guys I work with says, hey, I'm tired of hearing your complaints. Just write your own. So I said, okay, challenge accepted. So I wrote the first book in 2011. I shopped it around to a publisher called Loose Leaf Law, which was based out of Queens, that handles all of the, at the time, the not the procedure books per se, but the law books, the criminal procedural books for police departments across the country. And I was lucky enough to get them to traditionally publish it. And that was in 2011. And here we are in 2024. 2023, the fourth edition came out. So I've been very fortunate.
What do you attribute it to? What's in the book that made it so worthwhile to the police departments?
Well, the feedback that I have gotten, so let's put it this way. The first validation I got was when the New Jersey Civil Service Commission adopted it for their police promotional exams. So for a number of years, they were using it in the state of New Jersey to ask questions regarding the investigative portion of their exam. So that was a big validation moment for me right there. But from the feedback that I get from the students and even detectives in the field is that it's easy to understand. It's straightforward to the point without the fluff, without the, you know, the hyperbole, without telling stories that don't need to be told, just in respect of here's the material that you need to know. This is something to think about or suggestions that the detectives could use. And they really picked up on it.
Can you give any examples of things that you feel you've been very helpful with the book as far as training people?
Sure. So, for instance, there's a chapter on interview and interrogation, and I go through the Miranda issues and I, you know, do things like a formula, like, for instance, custody plus interrogation equals Miranda. And then I explain that math formula to him, saying that if the person's in custody and you're going to ask him questions about the case, you have to have Miranda. And those are the kind of things that are scattered throughout the book in what I call these pop-up boxes, where it's pulled, you know, right from the material, but given, you know, almost like a pull quote that you would see in a book. And it's in a box. And these are the kind of things that stand out to people, and they can highlight them and secure those pages so they can refer back to them.
Give me a couple of other examples of those highlights.
So, for instance, I go through the different types of fingerprints, you know, and that, you know, like the loops, whorls, and arches. And then there's a diagram that shows them what they look like. And then, you know, and then they explain the different types of patterns and then all the other things that go along with it. You know, crime scenes about, I did a series of photographs about how a crime scene should be photographed. I went to my neighborhood at the time. I was living in Levittown, and there was a park by my house, and I set up almost like a mock crime scene, and I took the pictures of the long view, the mid view, and the close up. You know, so that's the kind of thing that's, you know, it's what people liked about it is that, you know, yes, it was easy to read and it was simple, but the, you know, adding those extra things like the photos or the diagrams and the drawings kind of nailed it home. So it gave everybody an opportunity to do it, not only reading it for reading comprehension, but also the visual part of it.
So were you a detective or were you a sergeant or I guess your ranks changed?
Yeah, no, I wasn't a detective. I was a sergeant, what they call SDS, which is Sergeant Supervisor Detective Squad. So I was in charge. I was the XO, the executive officer of the 110 Precinct Squad in Queens. And then I went on to moved on to be the commanding officer of the Bronx Cold Case Squad. So I had detectives working for me in both of those capacities. And, you know, as a supervisor, it brings another level in there, which I also introduced into both books, because that's something that we want to prevent problems and we want to prevent errors. So yes, of course, there's nothing that says that I'm perfect in any way. And there's nothing to say that I know everything, but many of those things were built upon the experiences that I had and learning even from the detectives about how some of these cases could go. And sometimes the ones that you lose or the ones you get beat up upon are your biggest learning opportunities.
Are there any cases that stand out in your mind that you could talk about that might be interesting to listeners?
Sure. Well, the biggest case we had in the cold case squad was a man named Angel Garrity. He was, he was a serial killer, but we had him for 4 murders and 7 sexual assaults. And we ended up, he was in the Dominican Republic. We had to go through that whole process to get somebody out of another country. It was difficult at the time. We ended up only being allowed to bring in one of the homicide cases into a Bronx court because that was part of the deal with they had made with the government of the Dominican Republic. Believe it or not, they can dictate what happens with their citizens if they're going to hand them over. Yeah. And ultimately, he did go to, we went to trial, and he was convicted and sentenced to 25 years to life. So that's basically our trademark case, or the one I was part of that I'm most proud of, because the detectives did some amazing work on that case, and even the traveling involved and everything else that happened. It was a fantastic display of detective work.
Anything here on Long Island that you recall?
No, because our jurisdiction was only in New York City. But there were some cases that we've had that we helped other departments, so specifically Yonkers, that had we had helped them up with some cases of some of the, they had a serial killer that was going on, and they had left some unfortunate bodies in the Bronx that ended up being residents of Yonkers, and we helped them put those cases together. But they ultimately, you know, got the case together, prosecuted it up in Yonkers. But,
Are you still a police officer?
No, I retired. I retired on October 31st of 2012. So on Halloween, during the storm of the century, I kind of summed up my whole career, so to speak.
So what have you been doing with your time since?
Well, like most people during the pandemic, I took advantage of it. And I that's when I wrote the 4th edition of the investigation book. And I wrote the new book that just came out last year, too, called The Cold Case Handbook. So I spent a lot of time writing and doing that. And I got that book published with a different publisher. And, both works I'm pretty proud of. And like I said, I used my lockdown time to concentrate, because there wasn't really, if you remember, right, there wasn't really any distractions.
Yeah.
You can have television, you can have all this stuff, but there wasn't any place I had to be, I had to go. So yeah. it was pretty easy to sit down and write.
How is the Cold Case Handbook different from the first book?
Okay, so the Cold Case Handbook is much different because of the fact that it is a much different investigation. So, for instance, in the real world, when you have an investigation going on, you have a body, you have a crime scene, you have all those steps that you need to do about securing the scene and all those things to worry about, which the first book covers. In a cold case, you don't have that issue, right? You don't have a scene. You don't have a body. You don't have any of that stuff. You're picking up a case 20 years later of something that somebody else has done. And it is the most difficult case of all. And I explain this to writers because they've asked me, like, Joe, well, what's the difference? Remember, I said, okay, somebody has written a novel that they only half finished, and now you have to finish it. So what do you need to do? Oh, I need to go back and read the entire thing from the beginning. Well, exactly. And then you have to make sure that you're not tainted with what the first person wrote. So it's a process. And I lay that out for investigators. And the book has done very well on its own. So
well,
I'm kind of.
Now there's all the new tools that didn't exist 20 years ago.
Well, exactly. So right now, for forensics wise, the forensics part of it, meaning the DNA has gone leaps and bounds, right? So we've now have this investigative genetic genealogy that we're seeing closing, like cases like the Golden State Killer out in California, and something, some other cases. But for the current cases, they rely now on a lot of other different things, right? Like digital evidence, like the electronics, the cell phones, the internet records, the cell phone records, and video surveillance. And when you're dealing with cold cases, 9 times out of 10, you don't have that, right? It depends on when the year was when the crime happened. You don't have that luxury. So sometimes the cold case is just old school gumshoe detective work, knocking on doors, talking to people, reevaluating evidence, getting things retested again, following up on everything. Because one thing I learned, don't take anything for granted. So if there is a piece of evidence or a fingerprint that was found, don't take it for granted that it was tested. And if it was tested, follow up again. Maybe the DNA hit from 10 years ago wasn't a hit. Well, did they resubmit it? We don't know until we find out. So then we resubmitted things. And sometimes, you know, you get lucky, right? So sometimes it's better to be lucky than good sometimes.
Talk a little bit about, you've been coming out here east from time to time, or went out, you had a boat out in Montauk. Tell us a little bit about what this area means to you.
Well, since I was a kid, right? So my uncle used to live out in East Mauritius, so I spent a lot of time out there. He had a boat, and then when I got a boat, I was on the South Shore of Long Island. I loved the fishing and stuff, but when my wife and I got married, she was a city girl. She spent her whole life there, and I wanted to take her out to Montauk Point, and she had never been out there, and I took her out there when we were kids, and she fell in love with it, and we got married. It's been 25 years, and just about every year, except for the last couple, we would go out there. We'd spend time, if people know, on the north side of the Sun and Sound. We would rent a place during October, because remember, I was a teacher. She was a teacher at the time, and we had off for the Columbus Day weekend, and that used to be like our weekend. We would come up to Montauk and spend the time, go to John's Pancake House, and do all those things that the tourists do, right? Because it's fun. We liked it because it wasn't a lot of people around. It's kind of like you have your whole place to yourself. We go, you can hang out in the library, or you can go to shopping in the stores and eat at all the restaurants without having so many people there. It was a lot of fun, and it's something that we always remember.
Yeah, and the fish are running too in the fall.
Oh yeah. Yep, and you're coming into the seasons where you get the bluefish and the weakfish and everything else that goes on. So yes, Gossman's Dock, I know, you know, that's all that has changed up there now.
Yeah.
But you know, it's still fun to do it. So my wife is actually coming with me this year, because she said, I want to go back. We haven't been there so long. So she's going to be spending the weekend with us up there at in the Hamptons at the festival. And she wants to take a look around, and we'll probably sneak away and take a ride to the point at some point during our stay.
Describe the festival in a couple of minutes, what the different kinds of events that are going to be taking place. This is 11 to 14.
Right. So this event, like I had mentioned earlier in the podcast, is really intimate. And what I mean by that, I mean, you can talk to some of these famous authors that will be there, and some of these true crime people that you see on television just about every week. It's the accessibility to people that are in this industry is amazing. And even though there's a number of different venues, they're all pretty close within walking distance. There really isn't a necessary, or at least I didn't find a necessary, to drive anywhere. You can put your car, you can park it in one of the many lots that they have. So I know people say, what about parking? I know it's tough. It's still off season, so there's still plenty of parking available. And there's a couple of really big parking spots that people might not be aware of, you know, behind some of these stores and those kind of things.
This is mostly in East Hampton, right?
Yes. So you got the East Hampton Library is one of the venues. Last year we used one of the schools. I forgot what street it was on.
Newtown Lake.
Yeah, that's it. So, you know, and that was where they had the big venues, because they have a nice sized auditorium in there.
Yep.
And last year they had Ray Kelly there. You know, so where areas where they're going to have, you know, 100 people or 200 people, they're going to have, you know, in some of those big venues. And this year they're adding a couple of new things. They have they invited some podcasters from Long Island that will be there. So people who just do podcasting and not so much the video stuff, which is kind of exciting, because true crime, as you know, is growing pretty quickly. And partly that reason is because of podcasts and YouTube and all those other things.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast. We covered a lot of ground, and I'll see you there. I'm going to be going to parts of it as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you, Dan. So make sure you find me. As like I said, it shouldn't be that difficult to find me.
I will.
And I will look for you too.
Sure.
But it's great talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.